We are not heroes, nor are we villains, neither kings nor magicians, but we can tell you their stories. We are the Lore Keepers, and we welcome you to Halloween.
Welcome to Halume. You are listening to Lore Keepers. No, damn it. This is Lore Keepers, the boundless venture, the world-renowned podcasting opus, wherein the richest tapestry of lore in human history is sung into being before it is sung into being before your very ear holes. I am Frank.
I am Carter.
And whether you melt jewelry in volcanoes, burn steel to usurp the Carrion throne, or crit on your Grey Warden to kick flip, sit a... Did we really? We changed it. Sit a while by our fire, O weary wanderer, and let us weave you a tale.
A tale as old as time.
Oh, boy. This week we're actually going to be talking about guns. We're going to be talking about gun. Before we get into that, welcome back, Carter. This is the first episode we're recording after our big long ass break. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Good to be back.
You're actually still technically on your like school break though, right?
Yes. It's the semester begins tomorrow.
Oh, so are you back? You're actually back in South Carolina then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it looked like it. You have the Tree of Gondor?
Yes.
Is that what it is? Tree of Gondor on your right?
Yeah, but it's actually not
on your
right.
Left, my right. Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that your left hand that you're holding up?
Yes.
Okay, I can never remember how webcams like flip things around if I'm looking at a mirror everything. Hey, Macarena. He's moving his hands around.
Yeah.
So semesters are tomorrow. Jeez, that is like really soon.
Yeah, but I don't think I actually have anything to do on Monday and Tuesday.
No? That's kind of nice.
Yeah, I emailed my professor and I'm like, hey, can I have my office hours online? And if that's the case, I'll probably throw all like 3 hours of my office hours on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And no one will come.
Just because it's the first day of the semester. Who's going to show? They don't even have the syllabus yet.
Well, no. I just mean they won't come full stop in the semester. They never come.
Okay.
They never come. But if it's online and I can do it on like Mondays, I can just sit at my computer and play fucking video games. And then if someone does come, I can be like, oh, hey.
Hey, I wanted to ask you that. Have you been getting into any games over the break? Did you take the opportunity to sort of like just fall down a hole?
Yeah, I banged out Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
The whole thing? Did you do all the DLC and everything too?
I haven't done all the DLC. I did the main story. I did a lot of the side quests. I'm, you know, over max level because there is no max level. It's very confusing. And I still have the cult to kill because apparently you can finish the game without killing the cult. So
is the cult the Templars?
Mm-hmm.
Or it's like the precursor to the Templars?
Yeah. The Cult of Cosmos.
The Cult of Cosmos. That's kind of a fun... I like that because I know what it's referring to. I'm assuming it's referring to the ones who came before or something like that. Like the association with, what are those people called?
The Isu?
The Isu, yeah.
So no, cosmos is the Greek word for the Latin term, or, you know, the Latin term comes from the Greek word cosmos, which is, the Latin term is cosmos. And we also have a word cosmos, meaning everything that exists.
The cult of everything.
Yeah. So the cult of all of existence, the universe.
Oh.
Universe cult.
Hey, have you played Origins?
I haven't beaten it, but I played it.
Okay, because that's what I was going to ask is, so I'm pretty far back on, that's part of my backlog. I'll get to that in a second. But the last Assassin's Creed game that I played earnestly was Syndicate, which actually is like pretty decent. And the only reason I fell off it was because I just kind of stopped playing it.
I played and beat Syndicate. It was very good.
Yeah, I liked Syndicate. It was more of the same in a way that I think there's a part of me that is like sad that they kind of just departed and sort of rewrote the entire formula on Assassin's Creed and just made it like, what if we made it The Witcher, but with climbing, it, with like Origins and Odyssey and shit. But I don't feel terrible about that because I think they had already strayed so far from what made a lot of the free running fun in the other games. Like, I think that one of the better versions of it, where it started to lose me a little bit, was somewhere between Revelations and Assassin's Creed 3. Because I think in Revelations, you still have the old formula, which is, it makes me think, do you ever play Celeste?
No.
Okay, so that won't pan out then. The reason why I liked it is because you would have to, sometimes you'd have to look at the face of a building and be like, how do I get from here to there?
I see.
Like, you'd actually have to like look and think and plan a route, and it very much felt like if you've ever done bouldering or like any sort of rock climbing, you actually have to like think and anticipate your moves. And that's especially how like the game starts, is, you know, you have like limited abilities or you're like missing some climbing, and it's like a soft thing. You know, there's only a couple of upgrades over the course of the game, but it is still something that kind of sticks with you. And as you get better at the game, you get more familiar with like how the assassin that you're playing as interacts with the like the objects in their environment, the buildings and the structures and stuff. And so when you get to that point, you're like looking at things and you're like, okay, well, I know I can reach that. And you're trying to do all these, later in the game, you're trying to do all these calculations while you're like running away from, from guards, or like trying to silently kill people in a very quick succession. Like, there's like, oh, I have to make it over to there, but it's around a corner. I can't see this. So I'll have to like judge and evaluate, you know, behind this building before I get to the next person or whatever.
It was weird though in Assassin's Creed like 2, because, you know, the emphasis was on being an assassin and assassinating people, but you were also incredibly badass at just killing people in open combat.
Well, yes, absolutely. You're just a straight up killer, like open world superhero at that point.
Yes.
I think that that's always been this like discordant thing with if you actually look at the Hashishin and like the first Assassin's Creed game and what it was pulling from, the idea was initially like even after the game came out, like it was pretty much just, I think you had 7 or 8 targets and that was it. And it honestly had more of like a Shadow of the Colossus kind of vibe, where it's just like, you just kill these 8 people or whatever.
I've played first Assassin's Creed.
Yeah. And like the guards and stuff are less consequential, because that was kind of the point of the Assassin's Order, was kill for impact, kill one target and make it count to sort of like bring about or freedom or whatever, which is actually based in the historical existence of the Hashishin. Like, that was their whole, like, the, when you talk about the Assassin's Creed, that was their thing. It's not the nothing is true, everything is permitted thing. Obviously all of that stuff was like, you know, pretty big departure from real history the moment that it was got created in the first place. But yeah, you're right. Also, Assassin's Creed 2, not nearly as good as Brotherhood. Brotherhood's just better in every way.
Well, yeah, because they refined it.
And the killing, like when you have just a group of people in Assassin's Creed 2, you just have to wait for them to attack you and then you counter. Whereas, like, you can actually start to build a rhythm and stuff in Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. You know, they're taking cues from, like, Arkham Asylum at that point and stuff. But
yeah, but basically, what I want to say, I also played Rogue.
About Odyssey, yeah.
I played Assassin's Creed Rogue, and I played that right back-to-back with Odyssey. And let me tell you, I tried to play Assassin's Creed 3.
Mm-hmm.
I also played Black Flag. I didn't beat Black Flag. The last Assassin's Creed I beat, not counting the ones I just played, was either Syndicate or Unity.
I know you were a big fan of Unity.
Yeah, against the odds, I didn't have a lot of bugs, and I really liked the story. And the French Revolution was a really cool environment to be in.
Yeah, I think that the story never grabbed me. Like, none of the characters engaged me too much, which is unfortunate because I feel like they should have. I wanted them to. I wanted to like Arno, and, you know, I could see that they were trying to do similar things with the way that Ezio was a very, like, likable character. But yeah, it just didn't It just didn't really grab me that much.
Yeah. I would say that I actually, even though Rogue is not a great game, because it just feels like Assassin's Creed 3 or, you know,
Black Flag.
Or Black Flag, yeah. And it's just kind of that again. And the story wasn't particularly interesting. The ending, oddly enough, was what did it for me.
Yeah?
Because the ending ties together Unity, Assassin's Creed 3, like, it's so good because you find out in Rogue who kills Arno's dad. You find out in Rogue why Achilles in Assassin's Creed 3 is he no longer has any assassins and he's crippled. You find out why.
Oh shit. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah. And it's all in the last like 30 minutes of the game. You get all these answers.
Well, I guess that's going on my backlog. Which, speaking of which, I think we should probably keep going here. Just really quick, that was what I did, was I started to chew through my backlog. Played Watch Dogs 2, actually played it to completion. It's not a perfect game, and I think its politics are far from perfect, but I think it's by far one of the best games I've played out of Ubisoft in a long time. I actually really like that game. It's one of the best AAA games I've played in a while. Not necessarily, it's weird because I feel like it shouldn't have worked. One of the things about it is the fact that I played the majority of the game by getting my hacker dude, what's his name, Marcus, just hiding behind of a some shipping container and then like sending out a drone and sending out a little one of those two-wheeled, I don't know, like
an remote, RC like car?
It's like basically an RC car, but like it's like, you know, sort of more intentionally purposed. It's like it's got a jumper ability to jump pretty high, and it's got like little hacking equipment attached to it and stuff. And like, I basically just played the entire game as those two to the point where I came up with names for them, like Mario and Luigi. And like, I was literally just, I would just sit somewhere and then I just navigate around those two, and they just and like work together to just take out millions of dudes and stuff. And it was very fun and not at all like a conventional way, or it's just like not what I thought I was going to be doing when I played the game. But like the way that I was playing Marcus, I was like, well, this is what he'd do. He's non-confrontational, and for the most part, as much as he can be, he's non-lethal. So like they just shock dudes, or, you know, like sneak around them, you know, easy in and easy out. Yeah, I don't know, it's a very fun game though.
And it never forced you to
sorry go ahead
it never forced you to do it a different way.
Not really, honestly. I think I got through the majority of that game playing it the way that I wanted to. I still like had, you know, I still did a fair amount of like shooting dudes, but every time I did it, it was with non-lethal. I used like a stun gun or like this, basically like a grenade launcher that shot, you know, like a basically like a wide net taser, which is quote unquote non-lethal. Obviously, people can definitely still die from both of those, but it's sort of like the more humane way of playing the game, I guess.
A lot of the guards probably didn't have pacemakers. Probably fine.
Yeah. Most of them, if you're dealing with some heavy armed dude, like probably didn't have a pacemaker. Anyways, it's a fun game. I liked it. I don't think I've played any open world games. I played one open world game, kinda, that took place in San Francisco, and that's Driver San Francisco. All the rest of them, though, like I, you know, Oakland and Silicon Valley, and I don't know, it was cool. It was very cool. But played that. Then I played Link's Awakening. Then I played Ocarina of Time. I think not in that order or whatever. Not Link's Awakening. A Link Between Worlds. Those were good. I also beat Shadowrun Returns.
Not a Link Between the Past.
I beat A Link to the Past a long time ago. This is me attacking my backlog.
Okay.
So the game I'm currently on is Celeste, because I was going to play that. I played Shadowrun Returns as well. Game's fine.
I think it's like the Dargan one better.
Dragonfall?
Yeah.
Yeah, I started that one and then immediately stopped because I was like, I'm not that into this right now. I'd rather put my time elsewhere. I think I will come back and play Dragonfall at some point, but honestly, like, I don't know. Shadowrun's universe, I was telling Carter this in the preamble, which you can hear after the show. But I was getting into Android Netrunner again, which is like this card game. It's like this asymmetric card game where one person plays a corp and the other person is playing a hacker who's like breaking into the corp and stealing data. Cyberpunk. Honestly, dude, I like that world a lot more than Cyberpunk Shadowrun. Yeah, Shadowrun, there's just something about seeing an elf in a trench coat that I'm not into. I'm like, this is... I think I hypothetically I thought this could be cool. And then I was like, I saw it and I was like, actually, I think I'm good. I don't think I need you very much. It's interesting to have urban fantasy.
I think urban fantasy just becomes too problematic because you get like orcs and trolls that are just like naturally dumb. And it's like,
ooh. Yeah, that I hated that. I hate there's a lot of problematic things with the Shadowrun systems. I mean, for one, yes, literally they have a lower max intelligence. This is so stupid. In the game, it says something about like trolls are regularly perceived to be dumber than the other races, but this is not true. And then directly below or like whatever, you know, but trolls, you know, shown many of times to be very intelligent. Directly below it says max intelligence is like 6 or whatever out of I think 9 or 10 or something. And it's like, okay, so this is what they call ludonarrative dissonance.
Yep.
you're lying here. You want your game mechanics to be, you want to be woke, but your game mechanics are shit. Also there's like the whole thing with essence, and like your body, if you get like cybernetic implants,
you're no longer, you lose essence. You can't do magic. Yeah.
Yeah. You like lose access to magic, which again, is like so ableist. So fucking like, what even is that? Like if you have a prosthetic limb, you're less of a human or less of a, whatever you are.
It's a bit gross.
Yeah, it's kind of gross. Anyways, that's what I did with my break. Now I'm back in it. Now I got to prepare for, teaching some people in a firm halfway across the world at 5:30 in the morning tomorrow. That's going to be fun.
That is very exciting. So what else is halfway around the world? Guns.
Guns are also halfway around the world, especially if you're in Everest.
Yes. So, we talked a little bit a long time ago about guns.
Oh, we're doing it, y'all. This is it. This is our episode.
Yep.
We finally are coming back to it.
And we talked about guns with regard to pirates on the inland sea bordering Everest, which Frank can tell us is...
Fenislil?
The Fenislilian... Lake.
Fenislil Ocean.
There you go. It's an ocean in the continent.
I wonder if it's freshwater. It could be. Maybe we should make it freshwater because that seems really interesting.
It's freshwater.
You have a freshwater ocean.
It's freshwater. There you go.
Okay, cool.
And we basically explained that guns don't work on land, but they do work on the sea. Because we like pirates having guns. But not just that. Because we're a little bit more in depth than that. We basically said that the way water affects magic is what allows for these guns, which again, these guns are not gunpowder weapons, they're magical weapons.
Mm-mm. Right. So I think we have, for instance, cannons. I think gunpowder is a thing. In the world of Halumei in general, right? Or sorry, in Sidar in general, like I can imagine a dwarven cannon. That sounds pretty fucking cool, you know. Or the idea of like warfare where people are rolling cannons up to the edges of a castle to try and take it or some shit. I'm cool with that. I don't think Sorry, go ahead.
I don't know where we could place that as well at even Quintus.
It could be Pentus. You mean?
Yes,
we changed the name of that a while ago. Yeah, I mean, it could be an Avon Pentis. It could be something from Avon Cordis, and
could be
maybe.
Cordis.
I mean, maybe because here's the thing: like, if we place it in Cordis, it is sort of the Age of War.
Yeah, but I'm thinking
We've got the Bellum Obscura going on, so it could be something where people literally fucked with either people's knowledge of how to build, you know, cannons or something to prevent anything more powerful or more like, you know, I don't know.
I'm thinking that it came in the latter days of Avon Cordis because of developments in weaponry. And then it became like more popular, more, you know, outside of Dwarven Holds or wherever it was invented, Gnomish Holds maybe, in Avon Pentis. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also
maybe
magic.
Maybe it's like a closely guarded thing that the that like the dwarves know how to do that nobody else knows how to do.
Yeah, we could do that.
Something like that.
But we're not talking about gunpowder here. We're talking about guns. Magic guns.
Yes.
Pirate
also,
guns.
Sorry. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Yes. And I think so pirate guns. Yeah. So the precedent for this, for why is because I imagined a while ago, the idea of it's obvious that piracy has existed for fucking ever. I mean, we talk about the quote unquote golden age of piracy being something that happened for like 80 years in 1600s or so in the Caribbean, but like, oops, in the Caribbean, but like there was an age of piracy in the South India Ocean, or maybe it was the East China Sea. I'm trying to remember, but like for like 350 years, like before any of that stuff happened, it's just like what Western civilization normally thinks of as piracy, but pirates have been around in like Asia for fucking ever. And pirates have been kind of everywhere forever.
Pirates are still around.
Yeah, pirates are still around. But yeah, like as far as what I'm trying to do is I was just trying to say like the association of technologies with piracy or like what technologies need to be in place. Now, I'm not talking about boats. I don't know the first thing about the evolution of boats. I know that it's actually really important to how seafaringness works and that like in some ways type of nautical technology that was available to people impacted how piracy could form and function. And obviously things were sort of like a perfect storm in the Caribbean because of, you know, expensive goods like rum and sugar and all that stuff. But my point was just what I was trying to get at is like in the 1400s, in the 1500s, in the East Asian Sea, or South China Sea, there were like tons of piracy. Were they using bows and arrows? You know, like how did ship combat work before guns? Was it just straight up just people firing at each other? Obviously, there's cannons.
Even before that, you know, with like piracy in the Mediterranean,
mm-hmm.
You know, ancient Greece stuff. I don't know how often piracy was a problem, but I'm sure it probably was at some extent. Or you know, Roman.
Oh
stuff
God, like I have. That. I mean, I'm sure it was.
I imagine there's a lot of bows, arrows, javelins.
Okay.
Fire arrows, probably especially.
Or like, yeah, I was thinking oil. That. Like, throwing burning oil onto mm-hmm. other people's ships, like launching it from like basically a small catapult,
or slings, or you know, sling that kind of thing.
So here's the thing, Carter. Yes. I want all of that. I want all of it. Every technological level there in terms of our piracy. I think including guns. And I think that maybe, I think all I was trying to say there is I think that guns should exist. I would like for them to exist. I don't think that they're as common as like a magic user, like on that level in terms of, I think, so we said 2.5%, which I think 2% would be 1 in 50. I think 2.5% is 1 in 40. So for every 40 soldiers, there's one, like, you know, magician who is on a field of battle. And similarly, I think that for every, like, guns might be something that a captain and their first mate has, or maybe, like, one in every 40 ships has, like, a decent amount of guns.
Yeah.
We should figure out how that they go together, though, because like when we first talked about this so long ago, this was for context, y'all. Don't worry, you're not missing an episode or something. We used to do this thing called Microscope, where we would kind of try and determine like a history and stuff. You should look it up. It's kind of a cool way of doing like collaborative world building as a gamified form. It's honestly, it's really more just like a structure than it is actually a proper game, I would say.
I agree.
Yeah. But yeah, I think what we had decided was something to do with spans, and the way that spans work changed the way that water interacted with magic or something.
No, this was pre-span, I think.
Was it pre-span?
Yeah.
I mean, I think I was thinking about like the way that oceans are heat sinks. in the same way that like it was sort of like a magical heat sink or something.
It was just sort of like a giant water
power and magic
water battery.
Sorry, what?
It served as a giant battery for magic. But all the water was just like more energetic magically than land.
Right, and so like you could have, it was like a low voltage but high. I'm so bad at this in terms of electrical, but you know, like low power but high storage capacity. So if you have a lot of water, then you can always tap into that low voltage and kind of effectively have an ability to sort of recharge. Do we think that magic still behaves that way with water? Like what we know now in terms of like the nine flow, and it gets prismed, but it comes through as light. Then that light energy, does the light energy get prismed by the ley line spires? Remind me.
So yeah, it comes in as white light, and then it gets broken. The magic gets broken from the white light into its different bits by the ley line spires.
Okay. So then I think that also, then I think that we have to say that there are nine colors in Halume. I don't know how that even works. I don't know if we need to say more than that.
Well, I mean, we could say that each...
each what?
Each...
What nine going on?
Each flow of the nine flow has a color associated with it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. How many rainbows colors are there? How many colors are there on the rainbow?
I mean, it's a spectrum of millions. All you have to do is just change how you're dividing it.
It's true.
I mean, because we've got infrared and ultraviolet. At some point, we just decided there were seven colors, but at one point...
So there's seven.
Red and orange were the same color.
Are there seven colors?
No, there's nine colors.
Okay.
But I'm saying in our world, we say that there are, quote, seven colors, but that's not true.
Oh, yeah, but are there seven colors in our world? I was unaware.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the rainbow is Roy G. Biv. It's red, orange, yellow, green, indigo, and violet. Oh, green, blue, indigo, and violet.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, like indigo being different from blue is stupid. Why did we decide that? In the other way that people divide it is with primary and secondary colors. You have red, yellow, and blue, and then you have orange, purple, and green. But then also another way of describing it is that in nature, the three primary colors are purple, brown, and green, because those are what plants normally have as like parts of their colors. The secondary colors being, I think, red, yellow, and orange, if I have that right. And so it's like there are a million ways of distinguishing this stuff. Also, orange as a color didn't exist until like a couple hundred years ago. That's why redheads are called redheads when their hair is actually orange. Like color is such a subjective thing. It's a spectrum. Kind of like sexuality, huh? I wonder if there's maybe something about no, whatever.
I definitely sexually identify as orange.
You sexually identify as orange?
Yeah.
Yeah, anyways, so yeah, let's say there's nine colors in the nine flow. We'll come back to that at some point and see like how we actually divide those. I think that it could be fun to do sort of a Carcosian thing, where I don't know if you know about Carcosa and the king in yellow.
Is that just a off-brand Barbossa from the Pirates of the Caribbean?
No, it's a series of short stories that came out before that are Lovecraftian in their nature, or sort of like eldritch horror in their nature. But they come from before H.P. Lovecraft. It was one of the things that I think he drew from. So The King in Yellow is a series of short stories that was around the like sort of post-Victorian fascination with, you know, the sanguine, with death, with psychics and sort of the afterlife and all that stuff. So there's some of that stuff going on. But like Carcosa is supposed to be this like mythical city. And it's a place where there are nine colors instead of seven. And two of the colors, the way that they describe them is very good. And I'm not going to be able to pull that up here. And that's not what this episode is about. So we'll talk about it some other time.
All right. So in short, Frank, yes, the spires do break up magic from the light. They act as prisms. Okay.
All right, we established that. Great. So the next question is then, how do these guns work? I mean, do they still use water? I think that water and the idea of it acting as a battery for magic is a really cool idea with some potentially difficult to work with implications. because, I mean, yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's something we could do, something where it's that the water, because it is one continuous body that reaches almost like, you know, it surrounds literally all of the supercontinents and everything. It only works because it's literally that big. So like even the Fenicil Ocean, it doesn't work like this or something like that. But the thing I'm trying to get at is, so we did this with the batteries, or the idea that water was a battery, so that you couldn't really carry a gun very far onto land. Like an island, even on an island, like a gun would work less effectively.
Yeah, it would become like a pea shooter.
Mm-hmm. Where we also talked about the idea where it's like, oh, is it taking magic directly? And it's like you need to have something in a closed circuit. Like the equivalent of, if you imagine like a, you know, having a power cord connected to something where the gun is being attached to an outlet somewhere and the ocean is acting as an outlet. So if you get too far away, it's like pulling the cord of the vacuum out of the wall. Or is it something where you can charge the gun based on proximity and then fire a few rounds and then recharge it? I mean, I think, I don't know. There's a lot going on here. We need to isolate some stuff and figure out, like, you know, where to go first.
Yeah. So I think the question is, do we want to keep water acting like a battery for magic?
I don't know.
I see.
I think that's it's tricky because that it depends. Like, it's like, if not water, we need to have something that limits it to the oceans.
Yes.
Or maybe even specifically regionally. This ocean, this, you know, like the Marian Ocean. I mean, it could be something to do with the ley line spires and the way that they interact with each other. And so, like, if you get too far from the ley line spires,
it's like a cell tower.
Excuse me. They no longer work that way. Yeah. Or like eddies and currents. And if you are kind of riding the correct waves or whatever, then the magic is stronger and the gun works more effectively. But if you're not there, then it doesn't work. Kind of like the ley lines and...
But there needs to be a clear indicator, and that seems like it's hard to get a clear indicator.
Can you remind me what the three... Do you remember what the three ley line spires are that we decided were kind of equidistant from Padasari?
Well, maybe we do it by... What is it called? I think there is... there was ambition.
Mm-hmm.
There was... It wasn't peace. It wasn't. I don't think it was charity.
I think there was charity.
It was charity.
I think it might have been charity because.
Yes, it was one, charity.
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was. Was it? Yeah, was it charity? Because it was the idea of giving and the fact that giving is such a big part of Padasarian culture. And then it was. I think it was also truth. Was it truth or wisdom, maybe?
It was truth or wisdom.
Because the lore keepers are straight up stationed there on that island, and their whole thing is about kind of seeing the capital S story.
Yeah. And then there's that what was that other island that had the... It was like the samurai.
The mages?
You know, the samurai.
Oh, yeah. There is the samurai. It was about sort of like perfecting their abilities.
So then it would be perfect. It would be perfection.
Was it
perfection?
I don't
think it was perfection. I thought it was.
I don't think it was.
I thought it was truth.
Maybe it was truth.
Their observers and protectors.
Yes.
They don't.
That's right. Yeah. Because the thing is they were samurai, but not in the way like where martial prowess was this thing that. Martial prowess obviously is a very important part of their culture, but because they are guarding the ley line spire.
Yes.
You know, spans and things are protecting them. And protecting the spire, but more than that, like
it's like openness.
It was because they are gaining; they have all knowledge of the world, or almost all knowledge of the world. And so their decision is the only thing that would be wise for us to do is to not act on any of it. Because if we act on any of it, then we are like sort of acting in judgment. And we must only be observers.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it is too dangerous for us to have this knowledge.
Yeah. Truth doesn't judge, but wisdom is the judge thing.
Yes. Wisdom is about judgment. Truth is about acquisition.
Okay. So, yeah. So it was truth, creativity, ambition. Those are the three.
I think it was. Yeah. So that's five, three, and two. Yeah. No, I mean, so the only reason was I was like, could we come up with a narrative reason, a narrative excuse for why these guns work that is associated with one of those three? I think that Charity was the one out in the... No. Truth is the one that's out in the ocean, like in the Marine Dominion, south of the Marine Dominion, the Marine Ocean, south as it reaches sort of the edges of it and transitions into other oceans and seas. There is sort of a large-ish continent, something kind of like Australia size, but maybe a little smaller.
That wasn't Truth.
That wasn't Truth. No, that one is one of the other two. My point being that Truth is the only one that's actually in the Marine Ocean.
Yes.
One of the other ones is south there on the Australian continent, and then another one is on the mainland, close to the edge of the water. Not in Everest.
Yeah, the continent that Everest is on.
Umdara. Yeah. In some of the southern lands we have yet to really like explore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically here's that's what my question is if we were to try and align it with Truth, does that make sense? Can we make a gun make sense there?
I don't think
shooting
so.
Truth bullets.
I don't think
no.
So.
Yeah. I don't think so either. I don't think that that's very interesting and doesn't really, we could probably come up with some very clever narrative thing if we had more time, but I think that for now we're trying to just build the skeleton here.
Yeah. So let's just be like, okay, well, let's consider water as the battery for now. And we can always figure that out later.
I think we swap that battery out with something else if we come up with something else.
Yeah.
I think there's something interesting about the idea of water being sort of this magical sink, but the problems that I was trying to get at were, does that mean that any water-born creature is inherently magical or associated with magic or has an easier time with magic? Does it mean like all merfolk are magic? And if so, if magic is like the oil of their world, why wouldn't everybody be in all the oceans at all times? Why wouldn't that be where civilization flourishes? And obviously, I know in the real world, that is where civilization flourishes. But yeah.
I have some stuff to say about that.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
All right. It could be that doing magic in water is dangerous because of how much magic there is in water. It might set off some sort of chain reaction, or it might be that, you know, like in the similar
There's
way...
Like a lot of side effects or something?
Or in the similar way, yeah, like we're using electricity is dangerous in water because it's so conductive.
Okay.
And then I also want to say that the merfolk, especially lower down, don't have access to light. And light is a big carrier of magic. And so people are constantly bathed in magic in the form of light. Above. And then you lose that when you go in the ocean, but you gain this low-level ambient magic in the water.
Okay.
And so it's actually might level
there.
Out.
I wonder if the merfolk became merfolk because they literally just spent enough time in water where they started to transform into waterborne creatures. Like, I wonder if it was a form of magically assisted evolution.
Maybe.
Where just over time, because they had that ambient magic and they spent a long time in it, it was gradual enough that it fueled it. That could be kind of fun. I'm okay with playing with the idea that water is a magic sink for now. Also, I mean, here's another level of elaboration we can play with that and something we can think about and use in the future. Consider the fact that magic, that the world did not have water the way that it did when the ley line spires came in.
Yes.
And that might not have been an anticipated shit. What if magic is like a chemical... like a manifestation of spent magic or something like that? What if it is a byproduct of magic being used? So during the whelming, the oceans didn't just come back because they came back. The oceans were coming back because people were like casting spells for the first time ever or something like that. And actually the world itself was harnessing magic or something. You know, maybe it's not on people necessarily, but maybe it's a part of sort of a magical ecosystem as magic. Yeah, I don't know. There could be something there. I think that there could be an interesting thing there.
And it's possible we could tie elements into that as well, where it's like there's also magic in fire, but in a different way. And maybe there's magic in the air in a different way.
Yeah, that's interesting. Something to do with like the primordium. I think that there is maybe it reaches a point of equilibrium is my guess, where if it gets too far off base, then it starts to rebalance itself. But that also then kind of assists and feeds into the idea that magic is the way that the world is meant to be, and it's what allows for life. It's almost like it's this thing that brings things into balance so that life is able to be created. So when magic got cut off during the Ash Curse and in the, you know, the subsequent Avum Secunda, like things obviously were bad, but maybe those oceans didn't dry up all right at once. You know, maybe those oceans actually dried up because partially because the sun was out and, you know, there was no longer an atmosphere to protect people in the same way. But like, I don't know. It sounds like those are kind of one and the same, you know, the way that we talk about magic and the way that that behaves, it's like, it's a yes. And it's like, yeah, both things are happening because both of those are, they're part of the same system.
Yeah. Remind me about, what the drow use and the like program of bodies.
Anima.
It could be that magic,
the animating force. It's sort of the essence of instinct.
It could be that magic can help regulate anima. In a way that anima doesn't regulate itself. Because remember, our elementals are anima.
I like that. Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, yes, elementals are pure anima, or sort of the thing that is operating in the place of magic or a soul or whatever is anima, which gives them highly ordered instinct.
Yes.
And it highly could, complex instinct.
It could be that anima is...
It's like a computer made out of intuitive circuits instead of logical circuits.
Yeah. Well, basically what I'm trying to say is it could be that anima is like something that it performs things by rote, like you said, by instinct, and it can be manipulated by magic, but it cannot manipulate magic. So it's a one-way street where magic has this higher level thing.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I can go with that for now.
I think that's interesting.
I'm sure Future Frank is writing furious notes right now.
Yes.
That's very interesting. I think. All right. So.
Guns.
yeah, I think for now that's a fine idea for sort of like, you know, where the energy is coming from. We never really, man, we're so bad at explaining this stuff sometimes and catching other people up. Basically, let's break down real quick, like, how the gun is actually working.
All right. So a gun, Frank, is typically made of metal, and it fires typically some kind of projectile, a bullet rounded object oftentimes made of metal.
Yes. I think you're trying to be jokey here, but it's actually still helpful information because, like, when we really distill it down to that level of simplicity, it's like, okay, do our guns need to be made of metal?
It could be that there's a lot of force behind a bullet and that they tried wood and it like it broke. Maybe just needs to be metal. Or maybe, you know, it needs to be magically reinforced wood, or, you know, it's possible to have other materials, but they need to be strengthened.
Okay. Yes. I like the idea that there is the possibility of using other materials, but because there is still, I think... What is the propulsion of the bullet? Is it still an explosive power? Is it like magic is unleashing in the inside of it? Is magic creating a vector of velocity in a direction? Oh, sorry. Is it creating a vector of velocity in a specific direction where it's saying propel out at, you know, 92 meters per second or something like that? Or... is it just creating an explosion, and then the explosion is firing? It's just replacing gunpowder.
So,
what are we doing here?
All right, Frank. I think there's different kinds of guns. I think one of them is like it's like a big hand cannon or like big rifle, like blunderbuss looking thing, and it just like makes a localized delayed blast fireball. And then you have like a big pellet or like a lot of little pellets, and then it just blows up and like fire shoots out of the gun along with the pellets.
Are you saying that the pellet is like riding on clouds of fire as it's just like, getting blasted from behind?
Yes.
Okay. I kind of like that. I mean, I think you're right. I like the idea. I'm always for more options.
Yeah. So there's that, Frank. I have another idea.
Okay.
A conjuration one, which is less fireball because that's evocation, and more like it summons essences of fire and air and superheats the air, causing massive, quick expansion, which then propels more like, you know, and maybe there's some water in there for steam or something like this.
It's igniting the air and creating an explosion.
Yeah, but it's less like just a fireball.
Okay.
So it's more controlled, more specific.
And I think we do actually have a third type, which is straight up, it's more like a railgun.
Yes.
It literally just like has some sort of like conduit along the edges, and it just pulls and whips a bullet towards something.
Yeah, so I think those are the more expensive, and those are significantly quieter, probably. Except, you know, you get the crack of the bullet, but there's no explosion. It's just breaking the sound barrier.
Because here's the thing, all that the gun is really doing is it's acting as a conduit. I'm imagining that we have like sort of cartridges in the same, that kind of act like batteries. You get something that can essentially charge them up. This is playing with some kind of sci-fi tropes here about the idea of like charging up plasma guns or whatever. And so you get your little battery charger that you have sitting on your ship somewhere, you plug it in, and by plug it in, you have some sort of conduit that maybe actually physically touches the ocean, or it acts just as a resonant and like ambiently draws magic up out of the water. But it stores it in this sort of station, and then the cartridges are plugged into that station. Then, like, once each of those are charged, you have some sort of indication that they're charged. Maybe you don't if the gun isn't like complicated enough. And those act as your actual cartridges that then go into the bottom of the gun and give you a certain number of rounds apiece.
Yeah, and I don't think they last very long.
No, I honestly, what I was going to say is I think that unless you're talking very advanced, highly complex magical firearms. What would we actually call these? I don't know if we'd call them firearms then. We might have a different name.
Yeah, they're probably like, I mean, I think some of them are called firearms because they literally just fireballs in your hand and you hope that it doesn't blow up.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we'll come up with some cool name later.
I think there might be like, let's come up with a cool name later.
Yeah, I was going to say, because like water arm is very stupid, yeah. And so is magic arm. what I was going to say, though, is I think that for the most part, okay, this is me drawing something from the Assassin's Creed games. 3 and especially 4, Assassin's Creed 3 and especially 4 Black Flag, each gun only has one round. Because that's how guns were. Like, I mean, it took a long time to reload a gun. So the reason why you had, you know, the pirates who, you know, had like 6 guns all over their body was because literally each gun could only fire once. So you have a gun, you fire it, then you discard it and like have another gun, fire it, then have another gun, then you reload those later.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite things.
I think that
about like,
yeah, it's
Caribbean,
it's pretty
pirates
great.
Is just having like a belt with 4 guns and then having like a chest gun holster with like 3 guns. Bam, and you throw it away and you get the next one.
Yeah, you toss it to your first mate, yeah, to reload it for you as you keep firing. Yeah, it's very funny.
Yeah, it's great.
I don't know why that image is so funny to me. I guess it's just something about like the idea of just like firing this incredibly expensive, rich and like complex device and then immediately throwing it over your shoulder to grab another one. But I mean, I think these cartridges kind of work like that, is that either the guns themselves, maybe the... Because you could probably build a conduit. There's so many different ways you could do this. You could build a conduit into the gun itself so that it slowly recharges over time. And then it like starts to thrum with power, or like there's a little, like you have a little crystal gem and it literally just starts to glow when it has enough power. Yeah, it's literally like an indicator. And so like it might take as much as 30 seconds before like the next time that it's actually like drawn enough energy out of the magic. You could have more powerful ones that like I was saying, you know, literally like works like a battery charger you plug into the wall, where you have the cartridges kind of like put in upside down and, you know, they store a certain amount of power. Then in between those, either you have it intelligently like release another bullet into the chamber after it's been fired as being part of the cartridge, or you have to drop the bullet into the end and then like hold it at a slight angle so it doesn't come out again.
Oh my God, Frank, I'm imagining like the most expensive of the guns, like the railgun type gun. Mm-hmm. And it's like a long rifle but it has like a cylinder, like a revolver. Mm-hmm. And you flip it out and you look and like each, there are like six bullets or like four bullets, whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
And each one has a diamond on the back of the bullet. So you look at the back, you see the diamonds, and like if they're glowing, then you can fire them. And if they're not glowing, you can't fire them. And so then
you're saying it's like you're holding a rifle, but on the end of the rifle is like a revolver six shooter chamber or an eight shooter chamber.
Yeah.
That's really cool. and then, yeah, I mean, like you could do that. And then those bullets would be extremely expensive. You do just a small gemstone, but you have to you're literally firing wealth at the other person.
Yeah, you're shooting diamonds at them.
Oh, shit. You know what you could do, though? That would be really cool. There's the dumb fucking gun from, what is that? What's that show? It's the one about, Altered Carbon.
I haven't seen it.
Okay. He has a gun where he can fire like a bolt that then like can get electromagnetically like pulled back into his gun. They don't really use it for anything interesting, but we could do something here where like you could have bullets that are enchanted with like a returning mechanism so that after they fire, you fire all six of them. And then like you like sort of like pull on the handle of the gun or something like that. And like the bullets literally come and reseat themselves in the chamber to be recharged. Like they have like a reserve amount of power or something for returning.
I just imagine doing that and then the bullets just come flying at you and you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, I mean, it's very chaotic and dangerous because like they have to reseat themselves. could be bad. I was going to say like one of the things
I'm thinking
that we could also. Oh, go ahead.
It might be more like how like Daggers of Returning work is you throw it and then they disappear and appear at your belt.
Is that something? Yeah. Is that something that's, by the way, actually in the DMG, or is that something that what's his name came up?
I think that's in the DMG.
OK. That could be cool. I mean, again, I think you could go either way with it. So I think that we should start talking about maybe. OK, you know what? I think it's not just that you can go either way with it. I think that firearms or whatever we call them are fairly common. The base technology of charging up and using an explosive shot or using magical power to enhance like a weapon in this way, specifically to fire a projectile, is a pretty well-known and well-established thing. But on the Marian Ocean, I think that it manifests in a lot of different ways because it depends on the gunsmith. Oh, what did we call them? There was a specific name we came up with for somebody who uses both metallurgy and also magic.
Yeah. They were like
there's a really cool name.
It was like Glimmer Smith or something like that. I forget what it's called.
Not a Wimsmith. And I know that there's quick smithing is something that I pulled from Kaladesh, which is the idea of using magic as you are forming something to almost kind of like 3D print complex articulations, or it'd be like the equivalent if you could 3D print complex articulations, because it's like you're using. It'd be like if you're imagining Katara waterbending like white hot metal as it's like liquid metal and turning it into a form. So you can get like really complex, like, you know, French Felchian articulation handles and stuff using quicksmithing.
I know that I think this is different, though.
No,
it wasn't Ashwin's dad. It was my dwarf, half dwarf character. I think his mother was a glimmersmith.
You had a half-dwarf character?
Yeah, the one who...
What, was it part of Child of Five?
No, it wasn't Child of Five.
Or are you talking about something different?
It was the most recent solo campaign we did that Rachel joined.
Oh, yeah. The one that started in...
Rurark.
Fuck, Cae Talura.
Yeah. Rurark and Cae Talura, yeah.
Yeah.
And his mother was a glimmersmith, or whatever it is called.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to find out what the name is. We'll just call them gunsmiths for now. But I think that that's really, I like that idea, is every gunsmith is doing this a different way based on the magic that they know. I mean, they might have a magician in shop. They might have magicians come to them. But for the most part, they're like, you might have one who is manufacturing rifles that do this thing, you know, very expensive ones with, like, you know, that their shots can aim, or you know, that they have like this diamond on the end of them, and so it's like very quick firing but extremely insanely expensive.
And the diamond, like, half the time breaks.
Right, you have other people who are basically just making blunderbusses that it's just like, look, you want a big explosion in a chamber and a big piece of metal to come flying out? Just give it to somebody with a lot of muscles in their shoulders, yep, and there you go.
I just imagine it's like big pipe, and it's like wrapped in leather so it doesn't like burn their hands.
Yeah, it's basically a pipe wrapped in leather. It has maybe a butt for your shoulder or something like that to hold against it. And you're just kind of holding the pipe and then just releasing magic, and an explosion comes out of it. You tear a deck half to pieces.
I just
way.
Imagine like half the time.
If you hit it.
half the time, like, it goes flying out of your hands. The other times you go flying backwards.
Yeah,
that's
exactly. I mean, and there are some guns that that, you know, another gunsmith makes ones with no recoil, where it's instead of the charge actually, you know, it's working more like a rail gun, where like it's being pulled out of the chamber. And I was gonna say, I think that there is a legendary gunsmith that makes auto aiming bullets by fusing some of the magic that for how a magic missile works into the bullets themselves. And so, like, basically you have sort of a lock on where it literally gives you an interface or something that shines when it like has connected with the person that you actually have to make a connection with the gun. Like, it has to be,
it could be a sentient,
we call that attuned to you or whatever.
Yeah,
it could be sentient. And like, yeah. And you fire these bullets and then the bullets like, auto aim. And so you don't have to roll to hit. You just roll for damage.
Jesus.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, we're definitely... Jesus, if we weren't on time before, we're like, it's been a long one. I think, though, before we finish up, before we do our one-on-one, we just need to figure out how does this connect back to Padasadi? Like, specifically... I mean, that might be its own whole episode of specifically how do they work with firearms and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I think, are there a lot of gunsmiths on Padasari, or like, are there any? I imagine there are some that make guns that could work beneath the waves. So like for the treasure hunters, they work more like a harpoon gun where it's firing like a heavy object. And so they're making them for treasure hunters.
I think that there are many in the way, like, as it is, as many as there are in the world, like... There's a lot of them on islands, and the island with the most is Padasari.
Oh, you think they have the most gunsmiths?
Yeah, but I think that means they have like three or four at most.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they have the munitionists or something. Oh, like there's a, I don't know if it'd be a square, but maybe it's a row. Maybe there's like a street and it's where all of the gunsmiths and their apprentices and things work out of. And it's, yeah, maybe it's, I would say it's more than three or four. I think it's maybe more like five or six, but it's literally like, this is it. Each shop is massive because these people are wealthy beyond belief, because only the richest people can go and get their stuff there. They're gorgeous artisanal shops. Because again, if you're selling to wealthy people, it's as much the presentation as it is the thing that you're creating. Yep. And they're some of the brightest minds that that like the land has to offer. In order for them to take into apprentice, you need to have both, I think, graduated from that magician's college or whatever that place is called, you know, the academy that is on an island, and also have practical training in like gunsmithy in blacksmithing and maybe some other stuff.
Yeah, I think you have to be basically like a master blacksmith with whitesmithing training. So like copper...
Is that what we figured out was called, whitesmithing?
Whitesmithing is copper, silver, and gold.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Blacksmithing is iron and other metals that aren't considered fancy.
Gotcha.
And so I think you have to have some of that experience because, you know, it's all about like fucking ivory and gold inlay...
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Oh, I mean, every single one of those guns look like the fucking whatever. They're very articulate, very fancy looking.
But it might also be that these places, at least some of them are probably like super specialized and only sell firearms. But I think that others, it's like this is like a general purpose shop for magical items. They're very interested in enchanting things and all this sort of stuff, but they also do weapons, like guns.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, yeah, the first floor is like the general shop, and it's like, oh, you have enough money to go upstairs. Okay, let's go up there.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. I think that there's probably definitely displaying of some of the more attractive pieces. I mean, maybe they have two different doors or something where the shop is literally divided in half. And like in front of the windows, you can see the finest pieces because you always want to, you know, that's your advertising. But like there's sort of a second smaller door or not. The door isn't smaller, but it's like on a narrower part of the shop. And it like goes down a hallway on the right hand side. Or sorry, I'm just picturing like, you have two doors, you get one door and another door, and it's like you see the beautiful items in front, and then that's like sort of like when you look into it, that's the beautiful part of the shop. And then to the right, there's another door that leads down a hallway and then kind of goes into the back part of the place where like all the cheap shit is.
Yeah.
And I think like, so, okay, really quick before we finish up, I think this is the last thing I was wondering. Not to arm your entire crew, but to arm, let's say, to get 7 or 8 guns on a boat. A ship. A captain definitely has a gun. I think that maybe they're given a gun as part of their like induction into the Admiral's Club or something. Like the Admiral's Club, part of why it's so expensive is because they have an association with the gunsmiths.
Maybe.
And and like there's a special, you get your first gun that way. It's a very simple one. Not particularly interesting. You can get like, maybe you can get it commissioned and stuff to like have certain engravings or things. And so every captain has their own gun. I think that first mates, it's not uncommon for them to have guns, but it's not a guarantee. And maybe people who are up in the crow's nests have like a rifle. I think that there are more common types, like ones that use pellets and are literally just working as like an explosive charge. That's probably more common because you can kind of just get any blacksmith to make you small little metal balls.
Yeah.
And you can get 1,000 of those or whatever. You know, it's probably not cheap because they still have to use a mold and stuff, but you know, you can still do it. But yeah, I think that anything more complicated than that, and that's where you're really starting to push the price up quick. But yeah, I think you could spend a year's salary on a gun. I feel like it's like the same level as like buying a car. It's like, this is not cheap.
Yeah, remember, a warship, a sailing ship, a small sailing ship is 10,000 gold, and a warship is 25,000.
Yeah, I think that a gun is probably somewhere between 100 and 1,000 gold to start.
Yeah.
Probably closer to 1,000 gold to start, and I think that it just goes up there. And I think you can get guns that cost twice as much as any warship.
Oh, yeah, I think that you can...
And it keeps going.
Yeah, but I think like maybe it's like half the price of being a captain is buying a gun, and then the rest is buying a ship.
Right. All right. Well, I think that probably does it for me. I don't know if honestly, at this point, we've been talking for almost 2 hours. I'm good to not do a one-on-one.
Sounds good. Thanks for letting us be your escape. If you forgot your rage, or you want to make others forgetful, on every podcasting service known to everybody. So don't be greedy. Share us with your friends.
Did we discuss something that was confusing as hell? Of course we did. We always do. But chances are that there is some context in the podcast description. So go ahead and check there. You can also explore the subreddit or reach us at Lorekeepers on Twitter or email us at lorekeeperspodcast@gmail.com for questions or things you'd like to hear in future episodes.
Let's all take a moment to thank Josh
Silker. Pray. Let us all pray.
Let us all thank and pray to Josh Silker, the forger of Land of Heroes, the Lore Keeper's theme.
Thank you, Josh Silker. Yes. Anyways, until next time. Also, I should, you know, we should start including in this. Also, thanks to Samantha Wade, Sam Wade, for our new album art. This is the first episode we've officially recorded after adding the album art to the have you seen it yet, by the way?
I haven't seen it officially.
Oh, you should check it out. Just look at any storefront for our podcast. You'll see it. All it's right. Pretty fucking good. I feel like it was a long time coming. We're so excited about it. It is so much of a better representation of, I think, the energy that we're trying to give out than the extremely moody and dark symbol that I created in 2016. Just going to leave that one there. And yeah, I don't know. It's amazing. So thanks for that.
Looking at it right now. It looks good.
Mm-hmm. So until next time, don't forget, there are always more Guns of Fire.
Bye.
Bye. Dude, I've been using. You ever use Crash Course on YouTube? I don't know how much you use YouTube or not.
All right, this is probably, you're gonna get some under neck, but I've got a little stand, and this is probably about as good as it's gonna.
Ah, this is fine, dude.
All right.
Yeah, this is fine. Do you ever use Crash Course?
No.
Or like watch the Crash Course videos? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I understand the concept, and I'm sure it's a YouTube channel.
Yeah, so the Vlogbrothers, the Hank and John Green, they started a something called Crash Course, which is basically just like these 10 to 15 minute long videos on various subjects. And it's like basically just kind of an overview curriculum. Like they did one on world history, U.S. history, U.S. government and politics of like American government. They have a philosophy one, a sociology one. They have. And like, so they started doing these, and I think around the time that they did the third or fourth one, maybe like ecology or biology, or they just kind of go through the whole, like a whole curriculum from an overview, give you like sort of the enough information, not so that you're going to be solving complex math problems with like, you know, chemistry, for example, but that you understand like, oh, these are the chemistry, like chemical levels. And like, here's how bonds and covalent bonds, that's what that is. Here's how atomic structures interact with each other, what an atomic number is, that sort of thing. And I think around the third or fourth, maybe like seventh that they picked up, they got picked up by PBS.
Wow.
And so Crash Course is now being developed as this like, yeah, extension of PBS. They're really good. So they did one, like if you just want to understand, for instance, how the American government works or how it's supposed to work. Like I didn't really understand how the upper and lower houses interacted with each other and the fact that like, you know, senators have to be older than House of Reps or that they have a higher, you know, floor for like your minimum age. And the reasoning behind that, which is like, oh, very 1776, like Enlightenment era thinking of like, oh, yeah, if you're older, you're wiser. Sure. But they're doing this one on computer science. That's where I was going with this, was that and I'm like starting literally from the metal, like electrical inputs and stuff and understanding like logic gates and how logic gates then like you further abstract levels to understand like how RAM works and you know how commands are sent and like literally on the bits level of like how is one transistor interacting with another transistor by turning it off or on again and like electrical like impulse to basically tell this thing to become a one or a zero. It's very cool. And it's like blowing my mind. It's like hard to fathom just how complicated computers are. It's ridiculous.
I mean, it is. I don't doubt that.
Like, I think to create a, what was it? It was like a 1 megabyte RAM chip. I don't know. RAM is super interesting because you get like this matrix of cells where each cell can store one bit of information. And then you lace eight of those together. Eight of these like matrices together. And so you have up to, I think it's, I want to say it's like 16 by 16 typically, or at least in this, I think this was a 16 bit system, 16 by 16 rows that this one thing could return a value of. And then you have eight of those and it can either return a one or a zero. So the way that random access memory works is that there's an address based on four bits, you know, four ones or zeros that then correspond to locations within the matrix. And then based on that, and like it does that eight different times, it basically unlocks eight different variables at once and then sends that down as one byte of information. And like, that's how one byte of information is being calculated. Is like you unlock the information, then you read it off of that, like whatever that data is. But that one byte of information can represent like 256 different values because there's 256 addresses in the grid. Yeah, I don't know. It's just shit like that. It's very cool. Yeah. But anyways, that has nothing to do with anything. I don't know why I was talking about that. I think I've just been getting into computers the whole this whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get that.
Dude, it's sexy, man. I've never actually like cared to put a computer together before, maybe partially because I've never had like a window on the side or whatever, but like being able to hide all the cables, and then I had these like cable stays, and I got higher quality cables so that they like all look good and they're like they stay in their alignment and stuff, and I got water cooling and shit.
Yeah, the water cooling is the thing that most kind of frightens me, because it's like I feel like if I fuck up the water cooling, I just destroy everything in my computer.
It's I'm not doing like any sort of custom like pipes or anything. They make all-in-one coolers that are basically, it's just like two hoses connected to two fans, and then they're connected to a head that sits on top of the processor. It just gets pumped, and they do like a pretty fucking good job. Like obviously they're not going to water cool your graphics card or anything. And yes, like absolutely, I'm in the same place where I'm like, that would be terrifying. But because it's an entirely closed system, all you're doing is screwing things onto plates, or like, you know, connecting the two fans to the radiator, and then like putting the processor head on top of the processor, and it's like totally fine.
How annoying was it to do the apply the CPU and the cooling for the CPU?
Are you talking about the like the gel that you're supposed to put on the thermal paste?
Not just the gel, everything.
Oh, it was super. It was useful to have a second pair of hands. Rachel actually helped me with that. I think once I had everything kind of like once I had started everything, and I put the motherboard in first. You know, you get the standoffs. You know, you screw it in. I don't know. Have you ever built a PC before, or did you get yours like pre-built?
I built it. With some help.
Okay, so you know what I'm talking about. Like, yeah, so once I got the standoffs done, and I got the motherboard in, obviously the processor was like the first thing that I wanted to put in. I, you know, following the directions and stuff, I needed to make sure that was what I was supposed to do, but it was really straightforward. Like, I just kind of popped the head off, stuck the processor on without touching it. Obviously, you know, static, whatever, discharge, making sure that that's all clear. Yeah. And then once I seated it, putting the head of the cooler on, it was difficult. Thankfully, like, my case has a like, you can fully just take out the radiator. So I took out the radiator, screwed the fans onto the radiator, and then I had to change the mounting because it was mounting for an Intel system instead of an AMD system. But like, once I did that and I put the correct clips in, I did have, like, at no point were the hoses not connected to the radiator. Like, the fans of the hoses, the fans connected to the hoses, connected the to the pump, connected to the pump. At no point were those, like, detached from each other. And so as a result, it did mean I had this kind of like weird telescoping thing hanging off. And that's what like Rachel was helping with, was she was holding onto that because there was like thermal paste sitting on the face of it, because they just come with thermal paste already on them, and to keep it from like touching other things or banging around or whatever, like, she was holding onto that while I screwed it in. So an extra pair of hands was helpful, but aside from that, everything else came like went in really easy. I'm actually kind of kicking myself because I didn't realize that you want to match your processor with like your the speed of your RAM with your processor. Like, timing is also important if you get like your RAM timing correct. But like, the fact that my RAM is maxes out at 3200 and my processor runs at 4000 megahertz, means that like they're out of sync with each other, and the processor has to wait on the RAM maybe like 80, you know, or like 16% of the time or so. It's just, I don't know. I looked, because I have 32 gigs of RAM, and I was like, I looked to see what a 2x16 set would cost at 4,000 megahertz, and like most of the prices are in the 350 range. And I'm like, I'm not spending $350 on RAM. I can weigh it to see if it goes below like 280 maybe, and it would still, because I understand that the RAM would be still very expensive, but you know, right RAM now the prices expensive. Are hugely inflated around Cyber Monday. The price was definitely down to like 250 or so, and so I kind of just want to wait, see if any deals come back, because everything's expensive right now. But yeah,
supposedly there's some tariffs on China right now that are causing a lot of electronics to be more expensive than usual.
Yeah, some sort of deal expired, so something to do with the Trump administration, and now graphics cards that already cost like $680 if you can get them are going to be closer to like $800 because of the new year. And yeah, so I feel very fortunate that I kind of slid in under the wire there. A lot of reasons why I'm lucky to have gotten the graphics, because they didn't charge me until they shipped it. So if they had shipped it in the new year, they would have charged me the additional like $100+
I see, because they slap the tariffs on once it's in the U.S.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah, I need to upgrade my PC, especially my GPU.
Oh, that's so blurry! It's so blurry.
Yep.
Frank, that is a computer.
What's also great, Frank, is that not only do I see the picture, but I see the reflection of the window in the phone.
None of this is helpful.
Yeah.
There. Here. You know, isn't it look good? Isn't it?
It's great? Nice, yeah. I like the plants.
Alright. Yeah. We should probably start, huh?
Yes. I think so.
Alright, well, let's see. So I don't know what you want to talk about. I don't know if there's anything that you know, has been on your mind the last few weeks that would be a fun topic.
No, I don't think so, Frank. Oh, I did have some. All I've been thinking about lately, Frank, in terms of fantasy, has been Burning Wheel. Because I pulled up.
Oh, really?
Book, yeah, and I read through mm-hmm. some of the stuff, and yeah, like it's so cool. I love the idea that every race gets a special attribute. So,
that is kind of cool.
Men have faith.
What's humanity is?
Faith.
Faith, really?
Mm-hmm. And you can choose That's whether or not you want to engage with that special attribute. It's less compulsory than the other ones.
Okay.
Grief for elves, greed for dwarves, and hatred for mm-hmm. orcs.
Oh, cool. Great. are those the only four races?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
But it's just such a cool thing to have, you know, just another attribute. And the whole point is to make every race feel very different.
Now, on what level would that be? I mean, obviously, I don't assume that things like this can be a perfect crossover. But like it in a 5e D20 system, would it be the equivalent of having in addition to your strength and charisma and stuff? Or is it like another skill?
It's like in addition to strength, charisma. Yeah.
Okay. How do the systems of the game interact with that? Is it like if you're fighting a certain kind of monster and you have greed, then the greed does this or whatever? Can you roll for greed? Like, is that like skills that take it into account? Or
so occasionally there are things called deeds, and you can like use a deed point if you're going to try to do something really epic, and that helps you.
Okay.
And it, with elves, you can do a grief deed, which basically means you do a deed that's somehow connected to grief. And mm-hmm. basically you use your grief to fuel your like fervor for doing the deed. So you're like, you know, all that pent okay. up frustration and anger and sadness, you fuel that into some deed and you get to roll plus your grief, which if your grief, the lower your grief is, the less dice you get for doing a grief deed. And the higher it is, the more dice you get.
Wow, so you have to be like real emo. Huh. So is it kind of like, it kind of makes me think more about a tool proficiency then. I mean, at least in the way that you use it, where it's like, it's filling in kind of a more narrative-based role of like, hey, DM, could I use my grief for this? Or I would like to do this thing using my grief. And then it's like, yeah, that falls in line. Okay, go ahead and make a grief roll for your deed or whatever. Or is it just that deed is, it's like an actual known quantity of, oh, if you're doing deeds, you use your race mechanic.
No. So
race stat.
This is particular to elves, because again, all the race stats are very, very unique to the races. With dwarves and your grief or your greed or your hatred, it goes up depending on what's going on around you. Like if you lie as an elf, you have to make an easy test at the end of the session to see if your greed goes up. If you lie, or if you're lied to,
maybe I should just read Burning Wheel. This is interesting.
And your greed as a dwarf is very interesting because, when you see something that's like amazingly beautiful or incredibly expensive, like a giant hoard of gold, you get stunned basically, and you can
a giant hoard of goats,
exactly. And you can either stand and drool, which is a combat action that you sometimes have to take, which is just you do nothing, or you invoke the rule, I must have it, which is by any means you will obtain that thing. And that, and you know, it's like killing, stealing, betraying, any means.
And so that allows you. I do not like the way that races are portrayed in Burning Wheel. It's a very interesting mechanic.
Yeah, I love the mechanic.
The implications are very troublesome. Everybody becomes a caricature of a race.
That's what playing with, you know, race mechanics is that there's something inherent in your race that makes you different than other races. And this is why, you know, it's very much should be more species or what have you, because it's just a different psychology. When you think about it in terms of human races, it's like, that's gross as fuck because that doesn't exist. That's just fictional.
Right.
Weird. But when you think of it in terms of these are different species.
Well, I mean, even if you talk about them as different species, the thing that's more troubling for me is always that the fact that those are stand-ins for people. Yeah. So like elves, at least traditionally, elves are stand-ins for, you know, Christians, although that has been obfuscated significantly since the time of Tolkien, because I don't think it was that apparent back when people were first picking that up. They were just more thought of like sort of these elite entities of like incredible power. I mean, maybe more even associated with Ubermensch. Like there's a reason why elves picked up some of those tropes too.
It's true.
But I think the association between dwarves and Jews is like kind of never really gone away.
I agree.
Because it, like, all the worst caricatures of what a Jew is basically just a dwarf, which sucks. And so it's like really hard to disassociate, even if you're just talking about it as species and stuff, that's not how people are necessarily going to read it. Is it's like, oh, it's okay, because it's literally built into the identity of their species. It's like, even if you're, the more that a person tries to defend that, I feel like sometimes it just ends up backfiring, being like, well, okay, so it sounds like the way that you're justifying this is by saying, like, you know, that this is just how all of these people are. It's like, no, you don't understand. Their brains are literally wired different. It's like, this isn't helping. They're just so different from us. They're not even human.
Oh yeah, that's the catch, where it's like, you know, if you're considering this as a stand-in for the Jewish stereotype, or as a Jewish stereotype, then you're gonna get into trouble.
Right.
Yeah, and it
maybe, I mean, I think that if you're thinking of dwarves as a stand-in for the Jewish stereotype, you've already gotten into trouble.
It's true. It's true. And, you know, and given that that was historically kind of what they've been like, and as you said, it hasn't really gotten away from it. Though I feel like nowadays, without knowing the history of the term, people would take dwarves just be like, oh, you mean the short people? I guess, you know, if I was to look to if I was to represent a real life person as a dwarf in fantasy, I would pick like little people, like people with actual dwarfism.
Right.
Nowadays, I think, you know, if
right,
you know
which
the
then
history,
like is like,
Yeah, now it's like...
Yeah, well, anyways.
But yes. I think that...
Oh, go ahead.
I'm not saying that their stuff is unproblematic, obviously. Some of it is. Going to be problematic. I like the idea of humans having faith. I think that's interesting. But, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of says something about the other races, which is why don't they have faith?
Yeah, that is kind of interesting. I mean, it's weird. Like, it definitely puts significant limits by exclusion on what other people are capable of. Like the idea that dwarves don't worship any god then, or their idea of worshiping a god has nothing to do with faith or like belief or anything. It's just like a rote ritual then, I guess, or something, you know, it's like a weird, or like humans can have hatred, but they can't have hatred the way that orcs can have hatred.
Yeah. And obviously, coming from a Tolkien perspective, that makes sense because, you know, orcs were literally made to be beings filled with hatred. But obviously, mm-hmm. you know, again, that right. becomes problematic when you look at orcs as a stand-in for, you know...
Black and brown people?
Exactly. Though I would say Tolkien never really did that. He was
perfect. That wasn't Tolkien's association. Yeah. That was
he was perfectly happy to just be like
imperial world. That was the racist imperial world taking that and being like, oh, we see ugly, terrifying people who are huge and dangerous. Oh, they must be talking about black people.
Though actually, most orcs were smaller than men.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, there were very specific ones, the Uruk-hai made by Saruman, that blended the race of dwarves and men. Mm-hmm. Sorry, dwarves and men. blended the races of orcs and men. And they became larger than men.
Gotcha.
But like when you think about,
hey,
you know,
we
how...
we should...
Get started?
Oh, I was just going to say, we should get started, but also we should switch back to Duo because I think that the latency is shorter on it. And it's like actually kind of fucking with me. And the fact that like we know what's going on with your video camera now has nothing to do with like... Yeah. Okay, right, so I'm just going to close out and start Duo. All right,
but I just want to say that, there's a reason why goblins and orcs can be used interchangeably in Tolkien's world. It's because most orcs were like the size of a fucking goblin.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
I think of goblins as being like 2.5 to 3.5 feet tall.
Well, they probably weren't that short, but they were. I would say they were probably around the height of like a dwarf. So like between 3 and 4 feet, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, I've never seen goblins as being that small.
And there are some goblins that could get bigger, but it's just like mm-hmm. most of them are like tiny kind of thing.
Does he ever use the word goblin?
Tolkien? Oh, he uses it all the time in The Hobbit. He just doesn't use it as much in Lord of the Rings. He
uses it to refer to orcs.
Yes.
Maybe like a kind of orc? Is that kind of what you're saying? Is this like based on their stature and stuff? It's like, oh, this is a little goblin of an orc.
Yeah, it's probably a mixture of that geographically where they're from, and also just different people say different things because of language stuff.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, we really need to start now, though. It's but we're 40 minutes in. Fuck. We're not doing two episodes today.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff that we talked about, we did a new year in like looking ahead and what would happen in Padasari in a year. We talked about the Merfolk city. And then we did, I don't know if this was a part one and part two Z with the Marian Dominion, but we definitely talked about the Marian Dominion with like how it formed, what it was like, its relationship to the Sanguine Empire. And then like sort of how it fell into disrepair. Yeah, I don't know what you want to do. I think I would just go off of kind of, I'm trying to think if there's any ideas that really sort of have been grabbing me recently. I've been reading a lot of, there's an Android Netrunner, which is that Fantasy Flight card game. There, it got discontinued a couple of years ago. There's like a world book for it where it's literally just like, hey, here's what the world of Netrunner is like. I've been reading a lot of that. It's very interesting. It's honestly more, it's less Johnny Mnemonic and like Neuromancer, and honestly more like Blade Runner almost. There's a whole, they have Bioroids, which are basically like a mix between, I don't know, the way that the authors interact with them are like a mix between Blade Runner, what are they called? Replicants, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you ever read the robot series from Asimov, but like it's like Caves of Steel. It has like Lige Bailey. He's a detective and stuff. There are like automatons. What do they call them? Do they call them androids? I don't think they do. Whatever. Yeah, anyways, my mind's been all over that. There's some really interesting stuff. There's a space elevator, and the largest city in the world is known as New Angeles, and it's like right at around Ecuador at the equator, because that's where you'd need to put a space elevator.
Makes sense.
It's pretty cool. There's also hacking and shit. That's like the whole point of the net running, but it actually kind of takes second to the focus and fascination with a sort of a corporate arms race between Haas Byroid, which are the people who create the androids, and then, or Byroids as they're known, and Jinteki, who are a Japanese company that create clones. They do cloning. And so it's sort of like this, there's all these questions about personhood and stuff, and it's very interesting, and I don't think we can really use any of that to...
Sounds right.
I don't know. I mean, like, some of the stuff I talked about were food on Padasari, Padasari and pirates, artifacts of Padasari, the Captain's Assembly, which is what we already talked about, Marine Dominion, Padasari Revolution, a half-tidling.
Well, here's another thing to put on that list.
Yeah, you got something?
Guns.
Guns. Oh, geez. Yeah. We could definitely come back to guns. We could kind of talk about guns and pirates.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, would we do one or the other? We could literally just talk about guns and see how that stuff actually works.
And re-examine what we said before. You might want to go back and listen to the episode, though, before we do it.
Sorry, what?
I said you might want to go back and re-listen to that episode where we talk about it, though. No?
Yeah, kind of. I think only kind of. There were some, like, loose ideas, but it wasn't really an episode proper. It was we were doing a microscope. And I didn't ever record it, and we hardly wrote anything down, so there's not really, like, a lot of...
I see. I remember a fair bit, so we could do that.
Okay. All right, maybe... Do you want to do guns?
Sure.
I think, I mean, they would definitely have a huge impact on the, like, on Padasari, so...
Yeah, I agree. I'm ready to go.
I think we just get into it, then.
All right, go for it.